Good morning. It's the Tuesday FLX morning. It's 8:37. It's time to get healthy with UR Medicine Finger Lakes Health. I'm not going to be paying a fine here. I'm getting it right, Laura. Good morning, Laura Turbine.
Good morning. Thank you for getting it right. We are excited to be UR Medicine Finger Lakes Health. And what we were just talking about is we know that it's good news going forward for our community with this affiliation, and we're thrilled about it. And I am just overjoyed to be here this morning with Dr. James B. Mark. We call him Dr. Beaumark. There's not a family in this community that I don't think has at some point had someone who he has helped, cared for, done surgery on, not done surgery on, if maybe they didn't need it, but just needed some of his other expertise. So I'm just thrilled. We're here. It's back to school time. It's sports preseason time. We're getting into the season. And so Dr. Mark, a lot of people don't know about him. But he obviously comes to us, so I want to thank him for his service to our country, because many people don't realize that part of his training and part of his work was actually in the military service and in the Navy. So many people don't know that. We can talk a little about that, but we want to talk about arthroscopy, because we know that's something common for people this time of year. Whether you're a working weekend warrior or you are a young person out in this field, sometimes you just can't get away without that kind of surgical support. So Dr. Mark's been with Interlakes Orthopedic Surgery for many years now, a part of Finger Lakes Health for many years. He also helps lead our Finger Lakes Health Surgery Center, which we are so pleased to have the region's only outpatient day surgery center. So we're going to talk about all those things.
All right, before we do that, just one thing, and I just wanted to ask you about COVID. Are we getting worried a little bit? There's been some upticks, and have policies changed at all in the facilities at this point?
We have not changed our policies. We certainly know that there have been a little bit of uptick and a little bit of a new variant. We are, of course, keeping our eyes on it. Our staff has been continuing to mask in individual one-to-one patient interactions, so we've not changed our policy in that regard. There are some facilities around the area that have. We have not gone that route, and of course, we will have to just continue to keep our eyes on things. But at this point, I think hopefully, given the fact that we have vaccines and other things and have had the protocols in place, we're feeling good going into this season that we will continue to do education and keep people mindful. But at this point, we have not changed our protocols.
All right. Very good. Dr. Mark, welcome back. So good to talk to you again.
Well, thank you, Ted. Always a pleasure.
I know there are rules about patient confidentiality and stuff, but I just want to say, if you have anything to do with the health of Rayshon Boswell and or Tim Denham Jr., thank you, because those guys looked 100% in the first game.
I can't comment, but you can figure it
understand.
Out.
Understand. So let's talk about arthroscopy, the arthroscope. We hear it now. If you're any kind of sports fan, the term arthroscopic surgery appears about as often as the standings do. So tell us what the arthroscope does and how it's changed surgery.
Sure. The development of the first arthroscopy was about in 1912, believe it or not.
Wow.
It was about the same time with a Danish surgeon and a Japanese surgeon. And that was just in the very beginning, and they were just sort of, we'll say, tinkering around with it. And it really didn't, and then different, you know, prominent surgeons over those years, post-World War I, World War II, there was more development. But it really didn't come into a more normal use until in the 70s. And it actually was started with the knees as the joint of choice, or the joint that it was developed on. But in today's world, you know, it truly is a staple of orthopedic surgery, especially for sports medicine surgeons like myself. And it's developed to the point where it's the majority of the work that I do. And now the joints that are getting arthroscopy are the knee, of course, and you go up top, you have the wrist, you have the elbow, you have the shoulder. Again, you have the hip joint now. You have the knee and you have the ankle. So it's amazing how from the beginning of the development, how now it has gone into all the major joints in orthopedics. And arthroscopy means basically, you know, it's just non-invasive through very tiny holes around the particular joint, you know, understanding the anatomy, you're going to be able to get literally a camera inside the joint. And in orthopedics, the joint is expanded with fluid. So each one of those joints we mentioned is a little bit distended by fluid, and then the scope goes in, and it's a high definition, literally a camera. And then by looking at a TV monitor, so to speak, I can manipulate that scope all around the joint, looking at all the different structures. And then through another one or two holes or whatever it takes, little tiny things, I always say to my patients, like the size of the end of my little finger, and I don't have big fingers, so it's small. I can then pass numerous kind of instrumentation into the joint to perform the majority of the surgeries that need to be done in those joints.
So before that, did we just have to go in and cut almost like a regular surgery just to do our diagnosis?
Yeah, so if you look back in history, I'll use my dad as an example. You know, he had a simple, what would be in today's world, a simple meniscus tear. He was in the Navy. He was a young Navy lieutenant and ended up what's called an arthrotomy, where you open up the joint. You're literally exposing the joint. And back then, this was, I believe, in the early 60s that this happened. He had a meniscectomy done where the entire meniscus was removed. And that was a common thing to do, because it was believed back then that the meniscus was really not an important structure. It's tremendously important. It's a supportive cushion of cartilage in the knee joint. And for everyone that had full meniscectomies done, those people all went on to have knee replacements, because the joint just deteriorates much faster not having a meniscus. In today's world, you go in and the thought process is you're just going to remove the little bit of the torn part. So if it's torn, maybe let's say 15%, you'll end up taking 18% just to trim it and smooth it, and you leave the other, quick math, the other 72% or 82%, excuse me, leave the other 82% back. And you leave it there because it's important.
So let's talk about a couple of baseball injuries. The act of throwing a baseball overhand injures the arm in and of itself. So what is the rotator cuff and what goes wrong with it?
Yeah, so rotator cuff surgery is a huge part of my practice, and it's basically in the shoulder. And there are actually four rotator cuff anatomical structures, but mainly the one that is involved is the one that enables you to move your arm away from the side of your body. And that, the technical term for that particular rotator cuff is the supraspinatus. And those will fail from overuse. They'll fail from, in most of my middle-aged to older patients, it's from some light trauma where there's a fall, you put your hand out, and next thing you know, you can't raise your arm up because you just tore your rotator cuff. Or just attrition, just over time, unfortunately, a lot of our body parts as we get older, they're kind of deteriorating. And for some people, they don't even have to know how they got the rotator cuff. But rotator cuff surgery in today's world should be all done arthroscopically. It doesn't matter how big it is or how small it is. It can be done arthroscopically because the techniques that have developed over the years, what we're using for instruments and what we're able to do through these medical device companies, what they're contributing to the world of arthroscopy, is just absolutely crazy.
So now you're talking about the whole thing, not just the diagnosis, the whole surgery?
The whole surgery, wow. The whole entire rotator cuff surgery, whether it's a massive tear or a small tear, is all done through the scope, looking at the TV monitor, using multiple holes. Nobody should be getting opened up to have a rotator cuff surgery done.
And then the other one, of course, in baseball is the Tommy John surgery, sure, where we take parts from one place and put them in another.
Yeah, so that's ligament reconstruction. A lot of times what happens there is those things are arthroscopically assisted. So a lot of the surgery will be done with the scope going in to diagnose, clean up, do certain things like finding your points of where you're going to put the new ligament. And then in some instances, you're still going to do some open procedure to secure a particular ligament. So,
are you seeing different types of injuries in your young athletes than you used to, or any particular one that seems to be emerging?
I think you and I've touched on this before, maybe a year or so, a couple of years ago, especially with sort of the push in athletics is great for kids overall, and just for participation purposes alone, be part of something, be more physical than video gaming and things like that. But I think one of the bigger things that we see today as sports medicine guys is what's called overuse syndrome. And what's happening is we're pushing these younger, underdeveloped children. We used to always talk about it in baseball, the best kid was the pitcher and he just pitched and pitched and pitched, and that's terrible. And it, but you're seeing it a lot, and it's the fact that no longer is there a rest period. You know, kids are playing soccer, and then they're going right in from fall soccer into basketball, but they're still playing AAU soccer at the same time. And then they, in the winter, they, you know, they're hockey players, but they're still got the indoor soccer going. So there's never a time, and of course, all summer long, there's these leagues now. So the younger people that haven't developed yet are not getting the opportunity to rest their bodies. Back in years of my day, you know, summer was summer, right? You rode your bike, you played wiffle ball, you did things like that, and your body got some downtime. In today's world, these kids are, it's just by so many leagues and so much pressure, it's push, 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 and some of these little bodies can't take it, and there's a lot of breakdown things, you know, tendonitis and, you know, a little league elbow, little league shoulder, things like that.
I think we've talked before about the increasing specialization in younger kids. You know, if you're a baseball player, your coach will say don't play football because you'll get hurt. Is that worse when you have the same, because different sports are use different muscles and different sorts of motion rather than just I'm going to be baseball?
I think you just answered it. You did a great job. It's definitely, if you're one sport, the body uses those muscles continually the same way. When you change sports, you're still using your quads, your hamstrings, you know, your calf muscles, your shoulder, all that. But you're exactly right. You're using them differently. And so by doing different sports, it's definitely better than the just one sport 24/7. No question about it.
We always talk about this when we get together, and that's the ACL injuries in women athletes. Are we learning anything new about how to prevent those?
I think the biggest thing for that is, in a perfect world, a lot of preconditioning. There's been a lot of studies out and a lot of programs that are put together for preconditioning for especially female athletes. The number one ACL tear is NCAA women's soccer. No question about it. It has the highest rate of tearing, as certainly women tear ACLs more than male athletes do. And then soccer is one of the worst. The problem I see is, you know, coaches' times. And so a lot of it is put on the student athlete at a college level, high school level, whatever, to do their own conditioning. And like a lot of people, you know, we kind of fall short on that. Coaches only have so much time that they're allowed to spend with athletes, and they're certainly not going to spend 45 minutes of a 3-hour training session, you know, doing ACL preconditioning things. So they put those things through their athletic trainers to try to get these student athletes to do it. But again, life gets in the way. You're a college student, you're a high school student, you have other things to do, and you're probably not doing the preconditioning, the preventive stuff that will help prevent and lower those numbers of ACL tears.
Has the increased quality in training services led to fewer injuries? I mean, obviously at Hobart and William Smith, you've got a professional staff, you've got nutrition, you've got the whole nine yards. But in high school, where that really wasn't the case, we're starting to see it. In fact, I think UR Medicine Finger Lakes Health, you still staff some games as trainers with your own people, right, for a lot of schools?
We do. And what's so important is not just games, but practices. And that was one of the real turns of events, as we've taken over athletic training for many of our schools, from Minders to Penyan to Geneva and others. Our athletic trainers are right there on the field, not just or on the ice or wherever they need to be, but we're doing it at practices too, and both for the male and female sport. So we know those athletic trainers are making a difference, and we love the fact that they're out there in our community. And I hope Dr. Mark's feeling the difference too, with the really, I think, a super, super strong rehab department within Finger Lakes Health right now. And you've talked to Maureen Oyle, our director, along with those athletic trainers, Katie and others. So we're thrilled to have them.
Yeah, I think the answer clearly is it's a great thing that Finger Lakes Health has done now, and we're continuing to try to expand that, because we're just, that's a way to give back to the community. You know, we're supporting most of that on our own, but we feel it's important to you know, get these younger athletes, you know, better protected, better conditioned. And there's no question about it that those athletic trainers in those systems are showing definite decrease of injuries for these young athletes.
Let's talk a little bit about the older athlete, the weekend warrior, the 40-year-old guy that still wants to get together with his buddies and play some hoop. What should he know and what should he do to reduce the chance of injury?
Well, 40's not that old anymore, Dan. That's for sure. But, the biggest thing, again, it's the old, I always make a little bit of joke, you know, you can't show up late at the Geneva Y with your gym bag, and the boys are like, come on, let's go, we need you, and you run out in the basketball court at 42 years old and just start running up and down the court, because you'll probably see me with an Achilles tendon rupture.
There's a story about that. Yeah. Tony La Russa, when he was a player, apparently did that very thing. He showed up late for a game, went out to shortstop, first pitch is hitting the shortstop hole, he fires one over to first and ruins his arm.
Yeah, again, it's the pre-stretching, and is important for the cool down and the post-stretching of the activity. I always laugh that, you know, runners, you know, if you're driving by and you see a runner come out of their front door, you know, they push their arms against their house and they move their knees back and forth about two or three times, and they look down at their Apple Watch and they click the button and off they go. That is not a warm-up for running.
And then, of course, one of the most frequent sources of injury for, if you want to call it athletics, because it really is shoveling snow. So just talk about the importance, which goes into lifting, proper lifting technique.
Circling back to what we talked about, rotator cuff tears, when you're fixing rotator cuff tears, I tell my patients that we're not giving you 20-year-old tissue. We're taking your tissue. We're cleaning up the edges, we're bringing it back to where it's supposed to go into the bone, and we're re-anchoring it to the bone. We did not improve your tissue. So is there a likelihood you could do it again? Yes. And what that leads to is proper lifting techniques. And I always tell patients, my older patients, if you have two boxes to put away in the upper shelf, you used to be able to grab both boxes and honk them up there. You can't do that now. Now you need to get...
That's hard, though, I'll tell you.
You got to slow down, right?
I'm 63, I still want to do it.
Nope, you got to work smarter and not harder, because you do want to preserve, you know, some of these kind of things like that.
All right, Dr. James Beaumark with Hobart and William Smith, and with UR Medicine Finger Lakes Health. Thanks for the update. Always good to visit with you.
Absolutely. I'll see you out at the field this weekend.
All right, so you're off to surgery right now, right?
I am heading there right now.
Got the scrubs on. He's ready to go. Nurses, Dr. Mark is on the move. Laura, thank you as always.
Thanks, Ted.
And we'll get healthy again in a couple of weeks with UR Medicine Finger Lakes Health. It's 8:53.